Iran's leader Ayatollah Khamenei says those responsible for Wednesday's deadly terrorist attack on an Iranian shrine will receive punishment for their crime. Tehran and Moscow tell a UN Security Council session that Western allegations about Russia using Iranian drones against Ukraine are totally untrue. And the leader of Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement says the maritime deal with the Israeli regime is a big victory for Lebanon.
Well, welcome to the studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us.
The terrorist attack on a holy shrine in the Iranian city of Shiraz in Fars province leaves over a dozen people dead. Officials have confirmed 15 deaths, which include women and children. Over two dozen others have been injured in the attack at the Shah Cheragh Shrine, which is one of the popular pilgrimage sites in Iran. The Daesh terrorist group has claimed responsibility. The gunman shot his way into the shrine through one of the entrances. He then proceeded to the main compound, where he opened fire on pilgrims and staff. Officials say the 30-year-old assailant has been wounded and is now in custody. 3 days of public mourning have been announced in Fars province. Iran's leader has issued a message about the terrorist attack on the holy Shah Cheragh shrine, pledging that those responsible will undoubtedly receive punishment for what they have done. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said strong action must be taken to identify and tackle the root causes of such heinous crimes. The leader said all people and entities in the country are responsible in the face of seditious acts by the enemy and their traitorous or ignorant stooges. He advised everyone to stay united against those undermining the people's security and disrespecting their sanctities. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi says recent riots in the country paved the way for the terrorist attack in Shiraz.
These riots paved the way for terrorist attacks. They came to Shah Cheragh Mausoleum and sprayed with bullets innocent people who were worshipping God. The ground for such terrorist attacks was prepared by riots.
Raisi also said the riots have their roots in the fact that Iran's adversaries have failed to disrupt its progress through other means. He said enemies don't want Iran to develop and prosper. Earlier, Raisi vowed a severe response over the killing of civilians. Separately, Iran's envoy to the UN, Saeed Iravani, called on the Security Council to condemn the terrorist attack. He said it was a, quote, terrible terrorist attack on citizens, including women and children. Iravani said that terrorism is a major threat to international peace and security. Activist and political analyst Sarbaz Ruhollah Rezvi says a hybrid war has been waged against Iran with the aim of destabilizing the country and its security.
Look at the events step by step, what took place in Iran. It started all with spreading fake news about the Mahsa Amini beaten to death. Then later on, it continued with street riots. And later on, it continued with normalization of the violence in the street. Different media took a great role, US-backed media, United States of America's medias, Saudi-backed medias. They openly dragged the people and pushed the people towards violence. The Persian, medias in Western countries, they invited openly people to violence without any restriction. Then apparently what we observed were attacks on different Iranian security forces that also took place. Later on, what we observed was the activation of the separatist groups inside Iran, taken from Sistan Balochistan province to Kurdistan province, also to some other parts of Iran. And why not a terrorist attack? I mean, if you look at it from that perspective, we will find out that, as I said at the very beginning of my points, a hybrid war is going on against Iran. Different, strategies of war against Iran is now being implemented. And one important conclusion that I can get is that the command center for this hybrid war is the same. The one who is bringing people to the streets with lies that are publishing and making viral here and there are also responsible for what took place in Shiraz yesterday.
Chairman of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, Masoud Shajareh, says a certain process to demonize Iran is taking place, normalizing the use of violence against supporters of the Islamic Republic.
The Iranian nation, who has been target of terrorism from the time of the revolution and target of atrocities, be it committed by Saddam or by others, Iran has been targeted over and over. And we are facing right now a situation that the demonization process which is taking place against Iran day in, day out, it really is unprecedented. And it does lead to violence being unleashed, not just in Iran, but elsewhere. I mean, we saw in streets of Europe, mosques being attacked, sort of people who are gathering for Arba'in being attacked, people's hijabs being forcibly removed, and even, you know, five police officers being put in hospital with broken bones. And similar thing has happened in France and elsewhere. So really this encouragement of violence against Iran and in some ways Islamophobic nature of it, it's very worrying, and it goes beyond what is happening to Iranians. It actually has got sort of implication for all Muslims, because if Iranian sort of Muslim so-called opposition, if they go and burn Quran, remove people's hijab, attack mosque with sort of bottles of beer and wine, then, you know, the racist is a license for racists to come out and unleash their Islamophobia.
The terrorist attack on the Iranian shrine is drawing an outburst of international condemnations. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has strongly censored the attack, calling for bringing the perpetrators to justice. Meanwhile, the Russian President Vladimir Putin has expressed sympathies with his Iranian counterpart Ebrahim Raisi. Putin has said that Moscow is ready for increased cooperation with Tehran to fight terrorism. The Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson has also voiced Beijing's support for Iran's anti-terrorist efforts. Syria, Pakistan, Azerbaijan, Armenia, Oman, and Yemen have also condemned the terrorist act and sent their messages of condolence to the people of Iran. Iran's ambassador to the UN says Tehran has not supplied any weapons for use in the war in Ukraine, either before or after the conflict broke out. Addressing a UN Security Council session, Amir Saeed Erivani objected all accusations by the U.S. and its Western allies that Iran has delivered drones to Russia to be used against Ukraine. Meanwhile, a Russian permanent representative to the UN, Vasily Nebenzia, said the calls by the West for a probe into the use of drones will set a dangerous precedent. He said that such calls are in breach of the UN Charter. He called on the Security Council to condemn the West's actions and to defend the Charter. Under the Charter, he said, only the UN Security Council can mandate an investigation, and it shall not seek or receive instructions from any government or authority. The U.S. and its Western allies have been pushing the UN Secretariat to organize a probe into the matter. Lebanon and Israel finalized a U.S. broker deal aimed at resolving a maritime dispute. Officials from both sides separately submitted their signed copies of the deal to U.S. officials and their new coordinates for the maritime boundary to the U.N. That officially brought the deal into force. Earlier, President Michel Aoun signed a letter endorsing the agreement, but he said the accord will not change his country's policy towards Israel and that Lebanon will remain in a state of war with the regime. Separately, the Israeli cabinet, led by Prime Minister Yair Lapid, approved the deal. Just ahead of the signing, UN peacekeepers were deployed in the area. The deal is expected to end a dispute mainly over the Karish gas field. Prior to the agreement, Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah had threatened Israel with war if it violated Lebanese rights. The Secretary General of the Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah says the maritime deal with Israel was a big victory for Lebanon, its people, and resistance. Said Hassan Nasrallah said even the Israeli regime itself admitted it had not gained any security guarantees from Beirut. The Hezbollah chief also echoed President Michel Aoun's remarks that Lebanon will never normalize with the Israeli regime. He said the maritime agreement was reached through indirect negotiations. Nasrallah said delegations from both sides did not meet in the process and that signatures were put on a separate paper. Nasrallah also declared the end of Hezbollah's exceptional mobilization over the maritime dispute. He said the Lebanese resistance movement had accomplished its mission regarding the issue. Diesel shortages in the U.S. are spreading along the East Coast amid a ban on imports from Russia. There are now fears over a further surge in prices for the fuel as consumers brace for winter. Suppliers have advised customers to give a 72-hour notice for their orders in order to avoid having to pay above-market prices.
The war in Ukraine and a series of interlinked crises across the globe have triggered concerns about energy supplies worldwide. Countries are now beginning to look into contingency plans to avert or overcome possible energy crises. And the United States is no exception. Experts have now sounded the alarm bells over possible blackouts in the Northeast and New England regions. Those areas have already begun rationing heating oil as stockpiles slump by 70%. The rationing measures are imposed on consumers, which limit the amount of heating oil they can purchase. It's reported that the US Northeast is so short on heating oil that the fuel used to power home furnaces is being rationed even before the start of winter. The measures have highlighted the extreme fuel tightness in those regions. Scarcity and high costs have triggered gloomy prospects for the coming months. Wholesale heating oil in New York Harbor averaged $4.09 a gallon, compared with $2.46 at the same time a year ago. The emergency situation has prompted many consumers to opt for partial fills. Some say they will not turn on the heat until they absolutely have to. Apart from that, there are warnings that in case of a severe cold spell and amid global gas market volatility, consumers could face blackouts due to not enough gas for power generation.
Diesel supplies in New England, the region most reliant on distillate fuels for heating, have reportedly dwindled to about a third of normal levels this time of the year. The shortage has also put the U.S. at risk of further spikes in prices if there's a supply disruption. The rising heating oil prices have now pushed consumers to turn to liquefied natural gas or LNG. But due to the energy crisis in Europe, LNG prices are already sky high and will likely move higher as winter comes.
The rising heating oil prices have now pushed consumers to turn to liquefied natural gas or LNG. But due to an energy crisis in Europe, LNG prices are already sky high and will likely move higher as winter comes. That means that power generation firms would have to pay astronomical prices to bring natural gas to the US Northeast. There are now predictions that the highest wholesale electricity prices are likely to be in New England. Apart from the US domestic markets, LNG is in high demands across the globe. Europe's demand for liquefied natural gas has soared to unprecedented levels, given the fact that the continent is trying to wean itself off Russia's gas. The US is now the world's largest exporter of natural gas, but political as well as economic elements will prevent Washington from being Europe's rescuer. European nations are scrambling to store enough gas as winter approaches. President Joe Biden promised in March to export more LNG to Europe.
At the time, I noted that we were able to take this step when others could not because the United States is a net exporter of energy with a strong domestic industry. And the United States welcomed the European Union's powerful statement earlier this month, committing to rapidly reduce its dependence on Russian gas. Today, we've agreed on a joint game plan toward that goal, while accelerating our progress toward a secure, clean energy future.
The U.S. commitment to provide the European Union with additional at least 15 billion cubic meters of LNG this year is a big step in this direction, because this will replace the LNG supply we currently receive from Russia.
But the industry in the U.S. is already under pressure. That has prompted some politicians in the U.S. to state that American consumers, economy, as well as national security are at risk unless Washington maintains surplus inventory. Apart from that, much of Europe lacks sufficient import infrastructure, even if America could export more LNG.
Italy's new Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni and her right-leaning government won a confidence vote in the Senate after going through the same procedure in the lower house on Tuesday. Meloni has presented a program setting out policy for the full 5-year legislative term. Max Cibilli has more from Rome.
On Wednesday, Italy's new far-right-led government of Giorgia Meloni won a confidence vote in the Senate with 115 votes in favour, 79 against and 5 abstentions. The new executive can now get down to business. Meloni, aged 45, is the leader and one of the founders of Brothers of Italy, the party that spearheaded a right-wing coalition to victory in Italy last month's election. During Tuesday's first speech in the Chamber of Deputies, Meloni had presented a political program which aims as a priority to counter soaring energy bills and a looming recession. Among the main measures to take away are plans to introduce tax cuts, lift limits on cash transactions, taxing the excess profits of the energy giants in a windfall tax, and reallocating some of the EU pandemic recovery funds. Also on Wednesday, Meloni went on saying that Italy will remain an active member of the EU on her watch and that it would continue to be a reliable partner of NATO in supporting Ukraine. Italy's new prime minister said that the only way to facilitate a peace deal between Russia and Ukraine is helping Kyiv to defend itself militarily. Meloni's two main allies, media magnate Silvio Berlusconi and League leader Matteo Salvini, are longtime admirers of Russian President Vladimir Putin. U.S. Embassy Chargé d'Affaires attended in person the confidence vote on Giorgia Meloni's new government at the Chamber of Deputies on Tuesday. Some fear Meloni could embark on a course of confrontation towards the Western alliance. Back in 2016, Meloni defined the European Union as rotten to its core, while in 2014, Italy's new prime minister staunchly opposed sanctions against Russia after its annexation of Crimea. Max Civili, Rome.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Inflation is continuing to rise in America and prices move faster than increases in salaries of employees and workers. Problems in the supply chain, the war in Ukraine and high demand for consumers have kept the prices of goods in the United States at their highest level in the past 40 years. In a report, CNN says that inflation is rampant in the United States and the central bank's tool to fight price increases is to set higher interest rates. This makes borrowing more expensive and slows down the U.S. economy. We have taken a look at some of the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The New York Post has covered this story. An analysis from the Heritage Foundation showed the average American has lost $4,200 in annual income since President Joe Biden took office. Experts at the conservative think tank, the Heritage Foundation, say in a recent report, the losses come down to surging inflation and higher interest rates. Their analysis found that the average American has lost about $3,000 in annual purchasing power because consumer prices, which have risen 12.7% since January of 2021, have spiked significantly faster than wages. Wages have risen just 8% over the same period, which has effectively resulted in a pay cut for Americans struggling to pay for daily necessities including food, gas, and rent. Higher interest rates and borrowing costs have also reduced the average person's purchasing power by another $1,200. E.J. Anthony, a research fellow in regional economics with the Heritage Foundation Center for Data Analysis, says, simply put, working Americans are $4,200 poorer today than they were when Joe Biden took office. E.J. Anthony added, this financial catastrophe for American families is a direct result of a president and Congress addicted to spending our money, combined with a Federal Reserve compliantly enabling this addiction by printing more dollars. He added, now the U.S. Federal Reserve is finally fighting inflation, which is pushing up interest rates and increasing financing costs. Rates on all kinds of consumer debt are rising. Mortgage interest rates have doubled since Joe Biden took office, greatly increasing Americans' monthly payments. Concerns about persistent inflation were renewed recently when federal data showed consumer prices had increased 8.3% in the month of August, compared to the same month 1 year earlier, a figure that was worse than what economists had been expecting. The British newspaper The Guardian has more for us. US Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell warned recently that there would be pain ahead as the US central bank struggles to contain a surge in inflation unseen in the past 40 years. US Federal Reserve announced another sharp rise in interest rates on Wednesday afternoon, 21st of September, after the conclusion of its meeting. It also updated its economic forecast for the U.S. economy. Economists say the Federal Reserve raised its benchmark interest rate by 0.75 percentage points, the third such rise in a row, and plans to raise interest rates again in the coming months. The hike comes as central banks around the world are increasing rates to tackle a soaring cost of living crisis. Last year, the U.S. Federal Reserve dismissed inflation as a transitory issue, triggered by the pandemic and supply chain issues. But consumer prices have remained stubbornly high and have remained so despite a change in the U.S. Federal Reserve's view and its aggressive interest rate rises. The Bureau of Labor Statistics announced recently that prices were 8.3% higher last month compared with August of last year. The U.S. Federal Reserve's target rate for inflation is 2% annually. That news has led some to speculate that the U.S. Federal Reserve could increase interest rates by a full percentage point, a drastic move for an institution that usually moves rates cautiously up and down by just a quarter of a percentage point. The sharp rise in interest rates are aimed at slowing the economy and bringing down prices. Higher interest rates have fed through to the housing market, where rates for a 30-year mortgage have now passed the 6% mark for the first time in the past 14 years. Until recently, Jerome Powell had suggested a soft landing was possible for the economy, in which rising interest rates would bring down prices without causing a severe financial downturn. But at the annual meeting of the central bankers in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, last month, Jerome Powell acknowledged that economic distress was a price that the Federal Reserve was willing to pay to control inflation. He said, while higher interest rates, slower growth, and softer labor market conditions will bring down inflation, they will also bring some pain to households and businesses. These are the unfortunate costs of reducing inflation, but a failure to restore price stability would mean far greater pain. US newspaper The Hill has covered the same story. US markets are bottoming out as they process the latest interest rate hikes from the US Federal Reserve in its battle to fight 40-year high inflation. The Dow Jones Industrial Average dropped nearly 500 points to hit 29,590 at market close on Friday, 24th of September, its lowest point in nearly 2 years. Since the U.S. Federal Reserve started raising interest rates in March, the index has lost more than 13% of its value and is down more than 19% on the year. Other indices have followed suit. The Standard & Poor's 500 index fell 65 points to close at 3,693 on Friday, down more than 15% since last March and almost 23% on the year. The technology-heavy Nasdaq dropped nearly 200 points or 1.8% of its value to close at 10,867, down almost 20% since last March. Interest rates have increased to 3.25% since the U.S. Federal Reserve started raising them from 0% back in March. This has had the effect of making many goods and services more expensive and driving down demand to bring down inflation.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladheena amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear audience of IRIB English Radio, now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sayyid Asad Jafari.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Cultivating an Islamic identity in a postmodern world has been our topic tonight. I want to look at the components of an Islamic identity. So my sisters and my brothers, the first component of the Islamic identity is to capture the I inside of us. The who-ness inside of us. And if you understand the hadith by Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam, Allahumma salli ala. When he says, Al-qalbu haram Allah fala tuskin, haram Allah ghayr Allah. The heart is the sanctuary of Allah. The haram of Allah. It's where he's dignified. It's where he's respected. فَلَا تُسْكِنْ حَرَمَ اللَّهِ غَيْرُ اللَّهِ and do not allow anything to reside in that haram except for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So now Allah comes knocking on the door of our heart with his suitcase ready to move in. Thinking that this is his room. Opens the door, he sees everybody and anybody in there. Grudges from 10 years ago. This idol and that idol. The idol, let's say, for example, of how many views on YouTube. The idol of how many followers on social media. The idols of how many subscribers on your channel. The idols of sasti shu'rat, cheap fame. This idol and that idol, fame and fortune and money and women and men, God knows what else. And God looks and says, oh, okay, this room can't be mine, it's full. Can't be mine. I'm looking for a vacant room. And when the Quran says, you were not given two hearts, you're given one heart, God will move on his way. Unless that heart is empty, then God's given the keys, you can move in. Now he enters this heart that's empty and begins to furnish it. Puts his pictures on the wall, really moves into the place. That only happens when there is a harmonization of our life. This idea of our worship being farshi or fasli, not arshi and not asli, is a problem. I mentioned the first night, these extremes that we go through. When the time is right, there's not a better believer. When the time is wrong, there's no one worse than me. It's dangerous. After a while, the I will give out on you. I'm tired of carrying you when you're down. I'm tired of being taken for a ride when you're up. There has to be a certain level of balance. And so yes, literally we believe there are different eyes inside of us sometimes. the eye of social media, the eye of me at work, the eye of me at school, the eye of me in the masjid, the eye of me when I'm alone, when I'm with my friends. It seems like it's a completely different person. Can't recognize you. The same kid, mashallah, who recites Du'a al-Qanat to the point where there's tears in my eyes, is the same kid who posts what he posts on social media and my jaw drops. Voi bacha hai haan bhai, voi bacha. That same kid. The same kid now who's dressed, mashallah, like a pious individual, you watch him walking up and down his campus, can't recognize him. The same man who is the epitome of faith inside the center is the epitome of oppression inside the home. Does it happen? All the time. All the time. So part of the Islamic identity, part of this pull towards contemplation is to identify the various different eyes inside of me and bring them together into one. That's the essence of Tawheed. Tawheed is a life. I'll take a full circle back to the verse I asked you. Istajibu lillahi wa lirasuli idha da'akum. This is the life Allah wants for you to say labbaik to. It's a life where it doesn't matter where you are, who you're with, by yourself, with your spouse, online, on social media, at school, at work, in the mosque, in front of me, in front of your boys, you're the exact same person. No difference. That's difficult. It's also a journey. But that's the identity. So such that when anybody asks you who you are, it's the same answer no matter where you are. That's the kamal of a believer. The same answer of who you are will be heard no matter where you are. Otherwise, remember John from yesterday. Why are you here on Eid? I didn't have the pride to say it's my Eid. I have every right to not to be with my family. And so I said no, because I had this, you know, this inferiority complex. What if they fire me? This guy just started now. He's all of a sudden asking for a day off. All these things were running through me. I was in my 20s. It's a constant battle. But first, embrace the I. Understand there is absolutely an immaterial being inside of you. وَنَفَخْتُ فِيهِ مِنْ رُوحِي. That is all the elements and all the potential to rise above. Inside of those verses as Surah Baqarah, late 20s, early 30s, in this very famous talk with the angels. Again, another story that I am consumed with. Allah says, "Inni ja'alun fil ardi khalifa." I want to create on this earth a khalifa. The angels are like, I don't get it. That's me paraphrasing. You are perfect. You're unlimited. You're immaterial. You're flawless. And you want to create this human on that earth that will do corruption, facade, bloodshed, limited, flawed, material. How are you going to have this being represent you? And Allama Tabatabai gives a beautiful answer to this one response by God, which really isn't a response at all. He says, "What inni a'lamu ma la ta'lamun?" God doesn't address their concerns. Doesn't say, "Yeah, you're right, I know that he's the..." He says, "Look, it's okay. Just let it go. Choro bhai, you don't know what's going on. There's some things here that you don't understand." And in this response, Allama has a beautiful response. He says that this non-committal response of God was basically telling the angels, "You won't get this human being. What you see is what Shaitan saw, the physical dimension. What I see is the immaterial dimension that has immense potential to be able to, like I said, be my khalifa, such that when someone looks at them, they're reminded of me. That potential is inside of you, inside of me, inside of all of us. This wasn't one Adam's khilafat. It's all of our khilafats. We're all responsible for the idea of making God known. I say that because when it comes to this idea, even now as I speak, there's somebody who says, he talks a big game up there, but practically speaking, we can't do it. It's not practical. I don't have the tools. And I'm here to say, yes, you do. Don't look at yourself the way Shaitan looked at you as a creation. Don't reduce yourself to something physical. You are that creation that God says even the angels and all their beauty won't understand you. That's how complex you are. But that's how much potential you have. And embrace sometimes that discomfort. Push yourself. I'll push myself to reach limits that I thought I could never do. Remember, value compromise. It's okay to compromise everything. You don't need to be at every event. You don't need to please everybody. You don't need to do everything. You don't need to sit there and, you know, be accepted by the West. Sometimes simply paying your taxes and stopping at a red light is you being a great citizen. Sometimes we think that because we're a little bit brown, we have to go above and beyond to make sure that they, I'm sorry. As I said last night, be proud of who you are. Look inside of you, understand that you are a creation of God.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
روحي كريم عظيم عليم حالي حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
The pillars of U.S. supremacy are shaking as emerging economies are developing in a rapid pace. In this regard, we have taken a look at the world media to know their idea about this issue. Stay tuned. The website of Middle East Eye wrote, "The world order is fading away, and there is still no clear idea about the next one. It took just 30 years. The Cold War ended, but a warm peace lasted barely a decade. The pillars of the U.S.-led rules-based world order, neoliberalism, free market economy, unregulated finance, and globalization are now all in question. At the dawn of the 21st century, history and nature began to assertively reclaim their prerogatives from an overconfident and hubristic humanity. The events of 9/11 and the long American wars in Iraq and Afghanistan tarnished the unipolar leadership of the U.S. regime and its military superiority. Pax Americana has been in retreat ever since. The 2008 global financial crisis, raise doubts about a greedy, speculative, over-financialized and under-regulated economy. The fallout has been harsh austerity measures, spreading massive inequality. The latest data from the US and UK are chilling. Long-lasting monetarist economic theories have been cast aside, while printing money has become the new normal in the US and EU. Blind trust in the market's balancing role, the so-called invisible hand, has been shaken. Financial bailouts and the COVID-19 pandemic have shown that a visible hand, that of the state, is necessary. Neoliberal politicians, economists, and pundits have suddenly forgotten what they have been preaching for decades. China has slowly awoken and reclaimed the role it had for the overwhelming part of the last two millennia as the world's leading economic power. And it has gone even further, becoming an impressive technological power, with examples including 5G, artificial intelligence, and quantum computing, and an expanding military power. This has sent alarm bells ringing in Washington. The U.S. was shocked by China's rise and remains unwilling to share its long-established global hegemony. Reading the tea leaves correctly is thus crucial, but the Western media has already gotten it wrong in coverage of the recent Shanghai Cooperation Organization summit, obsessively searching for a split between China and Russia, when the real news was the long queue of countries willing to join the organization. Iran and Belarus have been admitted, and others could soon be added, including Egypt, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Bahrain, Kuwait, and the UAE. Incidentally, they are all allies and partners of the US. While it is true that Moscow and Beijing hold different views on many issues, the die is cast. They are on the same boat, with even the economists recognizing this fact. A key event is set to take place in China next month, when Xi Jinping is expected to be reappointed as the country's top leader for an unprecedented third mandate that could pave the way for his nomination for life. And in November, the U.S. midterm elections will determine whether the Biden administration can carry on its ambitious agenda, both inside and outside the country. A week later, the G20 summit in Indonesia will show how relations are evolving among the Global South and Global North blocs. What is clear now is that globalization is crumbling. As Zoltan Pozsar of Credit Suisse masterfully summarized, globalization was fueled by cheap gas from Russia to Europe and cheap products from China to the US, which sustained the American consumerist dream. The system also relied on American financial dominance, built upon the US dollar as the global reserve currency. And for decades, it was gifted with low inflation and zero interest rates. This situation is no more. U.S. financial hegemony is less tolerated, as the dollar has been excessively weaponized against anyone who does not align with Washington's positions. The main keywords now are decoupling and reshoring in the face of increasingly disrupted global supply chains. Cut off from Russia's cheap energy, Europe is adopting far more expensive alternatives. The US and China are increasingly decoupling from each other without even asking what impacts could follow from the cutoff of supply chains and financial flows. The website of Global Times said, the world today is undergoing accelerating changes unseen in a century and has entered a new phase of uncertainty and transformation. Human society has reached a crossroads and faces unprecedented challenges. Under these new conditions, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, as an important constructive force in international and regional affairs, should keep itself well-positioned in the face of changing international dynamics and better assume its historical mission. Countries should enhance mutual support and work together to cope with complex changes in external environment. In today's world, conflicts are looming large between unity and division, cooperation and confrontation. The SCO is under great test in maintaining regional peace and security, and its member states face severe challenges in maintaining their own security and stability. Only by strengthening high-level exchanges and strategic communication, deepening mutual understanding and political trust, guarding against attempts by external forces to instigate color revolution, and jointly opposing interference in other countries' internal affairs under any pretext, can countries safeguard their security and development interests and hold their future firmly in their own hands. Countries should expand security cooperation and jointly uphold long-term peace and stability in the region. Over the years, with an eye on common security, the SCO member states have carried out practical and efficient security cooperation, which has ensured the overall security and stability in the region. Amid a complex and volatile regional security landscapes, it is all the more important to stay true to the vision of common, comprehensive, cooperative, and sustainable security and build a balanced, effective, and sustainable security architecture, constantly upgrade the level of law enforcement and security cooperation within the SCO, and strictly prevent terrorist and extremist forces from destabilizing regional security. Countries need to deepen practical cooperation to materialize a shared vision of development and rejuvenation. Common development is real development, and sustainable development is a good development. All SCO countries are at a crucial stage of development. They should leverage their unique strength of geographical proximity and intertwined interest. They should uphold the vision of innovative, coordinated, green, open, and shared growth to achieve integrated regional economic development, energize growth, vitality, and deliver a better life to their people. Countries should enhance people-to-people and cultural exchanges to consolidate public support for the long-term development of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. Consolidate public support for the long-term development of the SCO. The most solid foundation for SCO's development lies in mutual learning among civilizations, and the most profound strength lies in people-to-people ties. They need to promote exchanges, dialogue, and harmonious coexistence among different civilizations, deepen cooperation in such areas as education, science and technology, culture, health, media, radio, and television, and build bridges of mutual understanding and amity between the people. Countries should uphold multilateralism and work together to make the international order more just and equitable. As a Chinese saying goes, power may win for the time being, but justice will prevail for the long run. Faced with power politics, bullying, and hegemonic practices, the SCO should assume its due international responsibility by safeguarding the UN-centered international system and the international order based on international law, promoting the common values of humanity, expanding SCOs exchanges with other international and regional organizations such as the UN, and improving global governance so as to make greater contributions to world peace and development. Over the years, with its own development, China has propelled the development of countries in the region, brought more benefits to people around the world, and continuously injected vigorous impetus into the SCO development. China proposed initiatives such as the Belt and Road Initiative, BRI, and a community with a shared future for mankind have been included in the outcome documents of the SCO mechanism. Its proposals, such as the Global Development Initiative and the Global Security Initiative, have also been highly praised by leaders of various parties within the SCO. At the summit, China called for continued efforts to achieve the complementarity of the BRI with national development strategies and regional cooperation initiatives. This call has received active response from relevant parties who agreed that the BRI is an important engine for building a community with a shared future for mankind. Building on past achievements, countries should continue to act in the Shanghai spirit, work for the steady development of the SCO, and jointly build the region into a peaceful, stable, prosperous, and beautiful home.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Faith based on understanding. Saturday, the 4th of Ramadan, 1394, 21st of September, 1974. Our Lord, forgive us, pardon us. Our Lord, we want only your reward and your forgiveness and nothing else. And toward you is the return. We are going back to you. There are many important things to said about returning to Allah that we will, inshallah, explain in the series of lectures when we come to the topic of the resurrection in the Quran, if Allah grants us the opportunity until then. So what have we understood from these verses so far? First, that faith and belief are two qualities possessed by those who answered the call to submit to Allah. Those people who have no faith, who have no belief, who just followed everyone else to be on the safe side, they are not within the domain of Islamic thought. There is no shame in saying so, because faith is necessary. Faith means belief, to accept what is clearly and unimpeachably true. It means attaching oneself to a cause. If this cause is not the thought of the religion and the Quran, and your heart will not be subdued, meaning if there is no faith in this heart, then this heart is a dead heart. It does not live in the light of Islam. It can never be called a submitting heart, a Muslim heart. Therefore, faith is necessary. This is first.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Second is that faith is of two varieties. There is the faith of those who blindly follow because they have a tribal mentality. Their fathers and grandfathers believed, so they believe as well. Because our holy scripture says this, because our religion says this, we say the same. And even if you bring them evidence to the contrary, they will never listen to you. This is one kind of faith or belief. But even this has two kinds. There are those who blindly follow, taqlid, like most people today. Such that if you ask them, how do you know that the Prophet of Islam was true? They have no idea what to say. They don't know anything. Their forefathers said so. Their school teachers said so. The people they see in the streets and markets says so. So, if all of these tell them that the Prophet was true, they will say so as well. Now, they believe. They really do believe that the Prophet was true. But this is just something they heard from someone who they trusted and blindly accepted without checking for themselves. Similar to the belief of those who blindly follow is the belief of those who follow tribally, ta'assub. Some of these people are ready, may Allah protect us, to insult other prophets to please our prophet. They think that these prophets are fighting one another in the heavens.
I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me. Through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.